Hi, this is Ann Weller of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication for the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. The center conducts innovative research and programs in health and nutrition, and it provides consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the center promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The center's work is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no industry or government funding, and Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. Today's broadcast focuses on the cover story of the June 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter. The report, entitled "Do You Need to Filter Your Water?" is authored by David Chart, Nutrition Action Health Letter Senior Nutritionist. The quality of drinking water in the United States is among the best in the world, says University of Arizona's water safety expert Kelly Reynolds. However, outbreaks of disease from drinking water do still occur, and they can lead to serious or sometimes fatal health consequences. Sometimes bacteria are the culprit. Sometimes the culprit is viruses. Sometimes the culprits are parasites. Then there are the thousands of drugs and household and industrial chemicals, most of which are unregulated, that end up in the rivers, streams, reservoirs, and underground springs that provide our drinking water. And the regulatory system is, frankly, slow to respond to emerging threats to the water safety, says Shane Snyder, a water contaminant expert and professor of environmental engineering at the University of Arizona. Here is some of what may be lurking in your tap water and why you may not be able to rely on your local water utility to keep you safe. We estimate that 19.5 million illnesses occur each year in the United States that are caused by microorganisms in drinking water, says University of Arizona microbiologist Kelly Reynolds. Particularly vulnerable are older adults, young children, and people with weakened immune systems. The culprits are viruses, primarily norovirus, bacteria, like Campylobacter, E. coli, and Shigella, and cysts that are produced by protozoa, like Cryptosporidium and Giardia. They can cause diarrhea, headaches, and in rare cases, chronic conditions like reactive arthritis. So how do these germs get into our drinking water? About two-thirds of Americans get their water from surface water sources, like reservoirs, lakes, and rivers. And all surface waters, no matter how pristine, contain waterborne pathogens from birds and animals, such as Campylobacter and Salmonella, notes Reynolds. Surface water can also harbor gastrointestinal germs that are flushed down the toilet by humans when they are sick. How do they get into the waterways? Blame it, in part, on the weather. The water systems that serve some 40 million Americans, often older systems in the Northeast, the Great Lakes region, and the Pacific Northwest, carry sewage and storm water in the same pipes. When water from heavy or sustained rains overloads a system, the overflow, which is wastewater along with rainwater, is discharged into rivers and creeks to prevent it from backing up. At least 40,000 sewage overflows occur each year in the United States. And that wastewater could become your drinking water after it's been treated by your local water utility. Since treatment plants cannot eliminate 100% of the germs, some can get through to your tap. And climate change will likely add to the stress on water utilities in the Northeast and the Midwest if, as predicted, it results in more and heavier precipitation there. Researchers at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore found that heavy downpours preceded half of the 548 reported waterborne disease outbreaks in the United States from 1948 to 1994. Germs may also enter the drinking water supply through contaminated groundwater. Historically, groundwater supplies were thought to be free of disease-causing microorganisms because the soil naturally filters them out, says Dr. Reynolds. But viruses and other microbes from contaminated septic tanks, landfill leaks, or inadequate disposal of animal waste or wastewater can end up in water beneath the surface. The Environmental Protection Agency now requires utilities to disinfect groundwater that has a history of contamination. Disease-causing microorganisms can also get into drinking water after it leaves the treatment plant. About one quarter of the nation's water distribution pipes are in poor condition, with leaks, cracks, and corrosion. On average, a city loses 18 to 44% of its water from leaking pipes, notes Yale University microbiologist Stephen Edberg. Those pipes are often buried in the same trenches as sewer pipes. Changes in water pressure can allow contaminants in the soil to be sucked into the water pipes, fouling the drinking water. The proportion of disease outbreaks linked to breaches in the water distribution has increased over the past decade, says Dr. Reynolds, and it's going to be a continuing problem. In 2004, University of Arizona researchers measured bacteria in the tap water of 7 Tucson homes. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, limits the amount of these bacteria, which in most cases are harmless, to no more than 500 per milliliter of drinking water. Tucson's public water averaged only about 50 per milliliter, so it was relatively clean. Not so for most homes. Water from kitchen and bathroom faucets in the 7 houses averaged more than 3,000 bacteria per milliliter. Levels varied among homes. For example, one home had virtually no bacteria in the water, while another home had about 13,000 bacteria. And levels also varied from day to day within the same house. Bathroom tap water in two homes averaged 2,400 bacteria first thing in the morning. Then the levels dropped to 140 bacteria after running the water for 30 seconds. So where do these bacteria come from? Well, if you have pets that lick the faucet, or children with dirty hands who play with the faucet, or if you handle raw meats and then touch the faucet, bacteria can enter the pipes and grow, says Dr. Reynolds. The bacteria get backwashed into the pipes, where they can form a layer or a biofilm. Another potential source of bacteria is stagnant water sitting in the pipes. Maybe you're on vacation, or maybe you have a second home, says Dr. Reynolds. Bacteria can grow in pipes while you are gone, and then you can get a big dose when the water is turned back on again. The antidote, of course, is to flush out the system by letting the water run until it's as cold as it gets, suggests Dr. Reynolds. That will certainly rinse out bacteria that have not established a biofilm on the inside of the pipes. If a bacteria biofilm has developed, it could loosen over time as the water faucet is used, says Dr. Reynolds, and a chunk can break off, and you can suddenly get exposed to a big dose of bacteria. It could be a significant health risk. So what to do? Use a filter that has been certified for microbiological purification by the Water Quality Association, the WQA. NSF International, or Underwriters Laboratories. Lead may also be lurking in your tap water. It is clear that lead can damage the brains and nervous systems of children, but it may also cause high blood pressure, cataracts, decline in mental abilities, and kidney problems in adults. We are learning that older adults should also be concerned about lead poisoning, says researcher Mark Edwards, a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech University in Blacksburg, Virginia. Recent studies have shown that low levels of lead in the blood that we once considered safe are causing health problems in adults. No one thinks to ever look for it in older people. The most common symptoms are abdominal pain, headache, fatigue, muscular weakness and pain, numbness, or tingling in the extremities. The evidence that lead affects the brain is troubling. In one study of nearly 600 women aged 47 to 74, those with higher levels of lead in their bones scored worse on memory and other cognitive tests than those with lower levels of lead. The women with higher lead had scores comparable to women who were 3 years older. So where does lead in our water come from? The lead or brass service lines that connect the community water supply from streets to homes in older cities can leach lead, says Dr. Edwards. And so can the lead solder or brass and lead plumbing fixtures inside many buildings. Sometimes just one tap in a house might be providing water loaded with lead, notes Dr. Edwards. It could be because some plumber had a bad day and did some sloppy soldering 40 years ago when your house was being built. Here's a case in point. The ex-mayor of a North Carolina town had suffered from chronic fatigue for years. And the kitchen tap in her apartment was perfectly clean, Dr. Edwards reports. It was her bathroom faucet that had just outrageously high amounts of lead. So all it took was an occasional drink of water from the bathroom tap. Another potential source is hot tap water, which can contain high levels of dissolved lead. We are finding that there's quite a heavy use of hot tap water by the elderly to make tea, coffee, soup, and other foods, says Dr. Edwards. And some devices that are used to heat water, like coffee makers and those electric heating coils that are submerged directly into a cup of water, can also dissolve high levels of lead into the water. It's safer to take cold water and heat it in a teapot on the stove. People, however, should not panic because the vast majority of tap water in this country is safe, says Edwards. Maybe only one out of 100 faucets is dispensing hazardous levels of lead into the water. That may not seem like many, says Dr. Edwards, but if that's your family and that's your house, it is not good. For about $20 per sample, you can have your water tested for lead. But testing is not 100% reliable. We are discovering that little pieces of lead particles or solder or lead rust that has corroded can flake off the insides of pipes, says Dr. Edwards. And that can deliver very, very high doses of lead that a one-time test can miss. The solution is a filter that removes lead at the faucet for all the water you use for cooking and drinking. If there is a lead problem, it is probably coming from your plumbing. So you have to treat it right at the end of the system, says Dr. Edwards. Tap water may also contain disinfection byproducts. Chlorine is an extremely good disinfectant for killing disease-causing bacteria and viruses in drinking water, says Paul Westerhoff, director of Arizona State University's School of Sustainable Engineering and the Built Environment. Plus, chlorine is cheap. That is why more than half the country's water treatment plants use chlorine. Another 30% of the country's water treatment plants use chloramine, which is a combination of chlorine and ammonia. And other water treatment plants use ozone. But there's a downside to those disinfectants. Chlorine combines with organic matter that is naturally found in water to form hundreds of compounds called disinfection byproducts, or DBPs, says Dr. Westerhoff. Chloramine and ozone produce smaller amounts of disinfection byproducts. The EPA regulates the 11 most common and best studied disinfection byproducts. 9 of the 11 disinfection byproducts cause cancer in laboratory animals. This is an absolutely clear-cut case of humans being exposed to chemicals that are known to be toxic in high doses, says David Savitz of the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. We all drink this water. The EPA estimates that 94% of Americans consume foods and beverages that are made with chlorinated water. The question is whether the disinfection byproducts are present at high enough levels to have measurable adverse effects on our health, Dr. Savitz explains. Researchers have focused on bladder cancer and pregnancy. Using water with elevated levels of disinfection byproducts over years or decades does appear to be associated with a small increased risk of bladder cancer, says Dr. Savitz. A 2004 meta-analysis of studies pulled from the United States, Canada, France, Italy, and Finland found that men, but not women, whose tap water contained an average of more than one part per billion of disinfection byproducts, the legal limit is about 80 parts per billion, had a 24% greater risk of being diagnosed with bladder cancer than the men who had no more than one part per billion in their water. The EPA estimates that from 2 to 17% of the 56,000 new cases of bladder cancer each year in the United States may be caused by disinfection byproducts in drinking water. When the agency slightly lowered the maximum levels of some disinfection byproducts permitted in water in 2006, it estimated that the move could prevent about 275 cancer cases a year. New research suggests that breathing in some disinfection byproducts and absorbing them through the skin could be more harmful than swallowing them. And roughly half of our exposure to chlorinated water comes from washing with it and being near running water and flushing toilets, notes Dr. Savitz. Tap water can increase the risk of miscarriages during first trimester, warned the Associated Press headline in 1998. In a study of roughly 5,000 pregnant women in Northern California, those who lived where the tap water contained more than 75 parts per billion of disinfection byproducts were nearly twice as likely to miscarry, but only if they drank at least 5 glasses of water a day. But a later study by Dr. Savitz found no link between disinfection byproducts and miscarriage in 2,400 pregnant women in Texas, Tennessee, and North Carolina. It was a pretty sophisticated study, and it did not corroborate the California research, says Dr. Savitz, then at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Levels of the 11 regulated disinfection byproducts in drinking water have dropped by 60 to 90% since the early 1970s, and their regulation has led to a huge improvement in the drinking water quality, notes Dr. Westerhoff. But there are more than 600 disinfectant byproducts in water, and new research over the last decade suggests that some of the unregulated ones that occur at very low concentrations are actually more genotoxic than the 11 regulated ones, he adds. Genotoxic compounds damage DNA and can cause cancer. And among the areas with the highest levels of the 11 regulated disinfectant byproducts, are Baltimore, Boston, Little Rock, Arkansas, Phoenix, and Washington, D.C. So what can you do? Use a water filter that is certified to reduce volatile organic compounds, which include disinfection byproducts. There's growing evidence that numerous chemicals in water are more dangerous than previously thought, but the Environmental Protection Agency still gives them a clean bill of health. Linda Birnbaum, director of the government's National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, told the New York Times in December of 2009. These chemicals accumulate in body tissue. They affect developmental and hormonal systems in ways that we do not understand. Examples include atrazine and perchlorate. Atrazine is the pesticide most often found in drinking water, especially in the Midwest, where it is applied to cornfields to kill weeds. It is also widely used on lawns and parks and on golf courses. All of the watersheds monitored by the Environmental Protection Agency and some 40% of groundwater samples from agricultural areas test positive for atrazine, according to the National Resources Defense Council. In some studies, women living in areas with high levels of atrazine in the drinking water were more likely to have lower birth weight babies. And in two studies, women in those areas were at higher risk of having babies with a birth defect in which the intestines, stomach, or liver push through a hole in the abdominal wall. The Environmental Protection Agency limits atrazine in drinking water to 3 parts per billion when averaged over an entire year. But people in agricultural areas may be exposed to much higher levels when use of the pesticide spikes during the growing season. The Environmental Protection Agency says that it is reevaluating the safety of atrazine and will decide whether new restrictions are necessary to better protect health and the environment. So what can you do? Use a filter that is certified to reduce levels of volatile organic compounds, which include atrazine. Perchlorate is an ingredient in solid fuels used for explosives, fireworks, road flares, and rocket motors, and it also occurs naturally and is a byproduct that forms in bleach. And perchlorate can be detected in drinking water and groundwater in 35 states and in the urine of just about every American. In large amounts, perchlorate blocks iodine from reaching the thyroid gland, which can make it harder to produce thyroid hormone. And perchlorate may also block the transfer of iodine from mother to fetus, which can hinder normal growth. It is extremely difficult for water utilities to remove perchlorate, and the only technologies available are ion exchange, which is extremely rare in water treatment systems, or a reverse osmosis system that's also rarely used because it is energy intensive. We've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. Please join me at the same time next month for our next segment. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and it is readily available as a podcast after